Okay, welcome back. Hour number two. The deaths keep rolling in. And I'm talking about deaths from the so-called vaccine. It is not a vaccine. It is an unproven experimental injection. It is not predicated on any traditional means of creating vaccines, which usually take 8 to 10 years. This is an experiment. An experiment that in prior tests has killed every single research animal used. Every single research animal has died. Understand? Do not get this alleged vaccine. It's not a vaccine. And I am very concerned that this vaccine is more than obviously designed to do one thing, and that is to reduce drastically the population of this planet. There are people who talk about getting this vaccine and what happens to them afterward. They're made to sit in a room, I think they call it an observation room or something, for 20 minutes, then they are pronounced just fine and told to go on their way. I don't know anyone who has described, and I know a few people who have gotten this, being given any kind of a real thorough, what would you call it? I guess a portrayal of the risk that they're stepping into. They're not getting any kind of consumer advice. No protocols are in place to warn people appropriately about what risk they're taking with their lives and their health. They're just not. They just, here's your shot, boom. You've seen the videos. Who's being told about the potential risks? Nobody. If they're handing him even a printout with microscopic font on it, I don't see that anywhere either. So this is all being done. We're being given what they used to call in the old days the bum's rush. All right? The bum's rushed, certainly steeped in and propelled with fear porn. Everyone has been beaten up so much for the last year that every new fear effort seems to take root and absolutely traumatize that many more people. The latest fear porn trick is what? Mutations. The South African mutation. The mutation from England, Great Britain. More volatile, highly more contagious, much more deadly potentially. This is all fear porn. It's all a trick. It's a trick. Just keep in mind, if you're under 60 or 70 and you get this virus, and very few people really have any problems with it at all, and don't even know they have it, your chances of full recovery are 99.9, I think it's 975. And that's if you do nothing. And by that I mean you don't take vitamin D3, you don't take selenium, you don't take quercetin and bromelain, you don't take Allicin C, you don't do anything. You still, if you become infected with this, it's a joke. You're going to survive in 99.975% or higher. I think it's a little higher than that. Of the people who get this, that's how many survive it. It's really disgusting. We're very lucky to have back for her second appearance, third altogether, an MIT graduate, a scientist who understands nanotechnology. Like I have found very few people in all the years that I've gone without a nanotech guest. Erica Kahn is someone who is more than willing to stick her reputation out, her neck out, to bring the truth as far as we can determine. And granted, a lot of it is somewhat speculative because we really don't know. But with Erica's background and wizardry in this field, we have a much better idea of what's being done. And I think what's being done and what's being told to us is just the tip of the iceberg. They say, oh, there's an mRNA virus in there. There might be 10 mRNA viruses in there. We don't know. And there's certainly nanotech devices, nanobots, if you will, nanomachines. They're putting all manner of things into this alleged vaccine. Now, let me do something real quick and jump over to Russia. Why is it that much of the world's countries are begging for Russia's version of the coronavirus vaccine, Sputnik V, over Pfizer and Moderna? Why? Because Russia's is not an mRNA vaccine. You're not. How many stories have you seen of people dying in Russia? How about zero? How many deaths over here admitted by the CDC? About 1,200 now. And the real numbers are, well, we'll talk about that with Erica Kahn. Thank you very much for being back here tonight. This story is really sprawling all over the map now, and it's getting worse. Wherever Pfizer and Moderna go, death is sure to follow. Welcome back.
Hi, Jeff. Thanks for having me again.
Yes. Go ahead. Jump in.
Well, I don't know. I mean, it's just astonishing. I think that, you know, this continues to play out the way it does with, you know, mounting numbers of people having severe adverse events, winding up in the hospital, if not outright dying. And, you know, there, these events and deaths are just being patently dismissed as unrelated.
They're being covered up. They're being dismissed. How about the 78-year-old woman in Southern California, Orange County? She went in to get her shot, thinking, like most older people do, they're doing the right thing, and they trust their government. They grew up that way. The government would never lie to us. The government wants to protect us. The government is our friend. No, dear. She got her shot, went into the observation period of 20 minutes in a room, sat down, and was dead before the 20 minutes elapsed. Dead.
Yeah, I know. And there are reports of that nature daily. These aren't rare events.
No, daily.
You know, and I think if this was any other drug in any other year, any other country or circumstance, that this thing would have been pulled off the market in the first week.
Never would have made it to market.
No, you're right.
It's still in phase three trials right now. Everybody who takes it is a test subject, a volunteer guinea pig.
Phase three will not be formally ended until 2023. So for the next, 2 years?
Right.
And I don't think the majority of people are aware of that. They think that this thing has been fully vetted and scrutinized, and it hasn't.
Not a chance.
No.
Not a chance. And it's only going to continue to kill people and cause... The numbers I have are over 40,000 adverse reactions. Many of those are terrible. Bell's palsy. Sounds kind of cute. No, you wake up in the morning, and I've told this story, I had it once. You look in the mirror, and one half of your face is literally completely dead. Well, it's still alive, but you can't move it. It's staring off into the nether worlds. You can't smile. It's horrific.
Imagine that's not insignificant.
Oh, God, that's huge. And this is going on all over the place. The number of other so-called side effects are, there's just a litany of them. They don't know what the hell they're doing, or they do know exactly what they're doing and they don't give a damn. And that's probably the reality of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't, you know, the extent to which the frontline workers that, you know, are seeing these people turn up in the emergency rooms desperate for help, and they, I haven't heard a single story yet where they've been able to provide them any remedies for what's wrong. They throw their hands up and say, we don't know. It's nanotechnology. Who knows? We don't know what's in the shot.
They don't know what's in the shot. They don't know what to do. Erica, they have no protocols to even begin to address this. They're seeing everything from blood clots to heart attacks, headaches, terrible debilitating headaches, paralyses of all limbs, not just one or two. The range of so-called adverse effects is
huge. Loss of vision, loss of hearing.
It goes on and on and on. The doctor in Miami, 56 years old, right? He was the first one. The big profile doctor down there who died. He got it. He was dead, I think, 16 days later. Just dropped dead in a tennis court. And when they looked at his blood, the normal amount of platelets in your blood runs somewhere between 250 and 450,000. in 1 milliliter of blood. Platelets are used to cause clots to form in terms of wounds. You want to have your blood clot, you want a scab to form. That's what platelets do. But now we're seeing people literally dying that have no platelets. I think there was 1 in 1 milliliter of blood in this poor guy. Now there's another one who just died, Michael Neckelman, a doctor. His wife Heidi told the Daily Mail in an interview that her husband was active and healthy and had no pre-existing conditions whatsoever. She believes the COVID-19 vax that he received on December 18th caused his death. She said, in my mind, his death was 100% linked to the vaccine. Michael did not experience an immediate reaction to the jab, but he noticed red spots on his feet and his hands 3 days later. When he sought medical attention at Miami Beach's Mount Sinai Medical Center, where he worked, doctors discovered that he had developed a rare disorder characterized by a decrease in the number of platelets. All the blood results came back normal, said his wife, except for the platelets, which came back as zero. At first, they thought it was a mistake, so they did a test again, a manual count, which is supposed to be more accurate. This time, it showed one platelet. Same thing. This is his wife talking, his widow talking. So they eventually diagnosed Michael with idiopathic thrombocytopenic purpura, purpura, I don't know, whatever it is, ITP, a rare autoimmune illness. Understand, those affected with ITP have an immune system that mistakes platelets for foreign invaders, causing the body to destroy them all. Neckelman commented that doctors talking to her husband said it was highly probable that the vaccine instructed his body to attack the wrong thing. Whoops. There you go.
Yeah, it's terrible. That's actually, there was one in December, right around Christmas time or shortly thereafter, that it's identical. You know, a male healthcare worker, doctor, was a big advocate for these vaccines, a believer in vaccines, and he was right, more than willing, ready to take the shot, and he did. And I think he got through two of, well, it was probably only one, being it was December, but the same identical scenario. Ends up in the hospital, they don't know what to do for him, they keep transfusing platelets, and no sooner do they transfuse them, they're just about gone.
Yeah. This is amazing.
It's when criminal. The fact that they're excusing these things or, you know, belittling or diminishing their significance, I mean, that tells me there's some kind of cover up going on.
Here's a $64 question for you, and I know you don't have the exact answer, but as a nanotech scientist and with a great background in this field, how do we begin to trust Pfizer or Moderna? They're using this mRNA platform. Remember the other vaccines out there, maybe AstraZeneca is too, I don't know, but most of the others are not. They're using a different format. But how are people so stupid that they're going to trust organized medicine and the government after all we've been through? And just looking at the most outrageous election fraud in history, didn't they learn anything about the alleged government?
I think there's still a significant portion of the population that does not believe there was any election fraud. And if you're, you know, of that mindset, then you probably still believe that the government is acting in your favor and making helpful suggestions that will benefit you.
Wow.
And if endorse Pfizer and Moderna, then it must be okay.
Must be okay. If CDC says about 1,100 and some have died so far here in the U.S., what do you think? What's the real number?
I've heard over the years that the typical percentage of events that are actually recorded is only 1% of what's actually out there. And
wow.
The CDC recently said that, you know, what's on there right now is probably only 50% of what's actually happening, that's probably generous. I think we're just seeing the tip of the iceberg.
All right. To back that up, a woman physician on the East Coast has been keeping me up to date on what she's seeing. She takes care of about, I think, 6 or 7 senior citizen residential complexes. And these are for older people, 60, 80. Some have Alzheimer's beginning, early, late, whatever. It runs the gamut. And this doctor, she goes in there and takes care of these people. Geriatrics. She because she cares about them. No, geriatrics is not the most exciting field in medicine, right? So a lot of doctors stay away from that. But she goes in there. She also works in an urgent care facility. Well, I spoke to her again today, and if you all remember, when they began to give the, I want to call them inmates, but the tenants in these senior homes, the vaccines, they were Pfizer and Moderna. I don't know which predominates, but one or the other. He said that within 48 hours of the first shot, 7 of his patients died, and after the second shot, 12 more died. And when she called today, she said that 6 more have died since these shots were administered. So it's now that's 25 right there. Okay, 25, one doctor, 6 or 7, and they're relatively small. Senior citizen residences. They're full room and board kind of places. That's 25 right there. One doctor. And there are many stories out there now of other people trying to come forward. And there are stories about how they've been threatened. Professional nurses now are being told by their unions, if they're unionized, I guess many are, that they're finished, they're done if they open their mouths at all. Seniors are dropping like flies after getting these vaccines. That's a fact.
Yep. And now they're, I guess, advocating giving them to, you know, disabled people, people that are institutionalized for one reason or another. I mean, you can kind of connect the dots here and see why these populations are being, I guess, targeted would be the word.
Exactly right.
You know, because it does suit a particular agenda. I mean, we know that the, you know, Social Security system's in trouble, Medicare, Medicaid. It's not solvent, and so this answers, you know, one problem. We could reduce
depopulation.
The economic burden. Yeah,
massive depopulation is what is. Look at the Georgia Guidestones, friends. I mean, most of you know about that, and it's right there. They're going to reduce the world population by 80%. That's their goal. They want about 500 million left, maybe a little closer to a billion. I don't know, but it's around 500 million. That's what they say. It's right there in stone, the Georgia Guidestones. Look it up if you haven't seen it. So how are they going to do that? They're going to nuke the whole planet? If they do, it's not going to be suitable for habitation for anybody. Plus, the real estate will all be destroyed. So why do that? What's a better way? Biological warfare, which is what this is. This is weaponized medicine. It's bio-war. And that's what they're doing to people. And there are several schools of thought on how this vaccine is going to do it. Explain how it works, how the mRNA works, if you would, please, Erica. How does it work?
Okay,
in the
so the mRNA is a genetic sequence, and the one that they say that they are putting into these vaccines will code for the spike protein on the exterior of the coronavirus. And that's supposedly all that's in there in terms of genetic instructions. Now, I have heard that there's other things in both the Pfizer and Moderna. We can talk about that later. But anyway, this all it's doing is coding so that when they inject this vaccine into your body, this mRNA will find itself to various cells and infect them or transfect them so that they will begin to produce this spike protein. Well, if your body's intelligent, it will realize fairly quickly that, hey, that doesn't belong here. That's not a protein that, you know, should be in my human body. So it will tag that cell for destruction. And so that's when you get supposedly,
not just the protein, it'll tag the cell, the originator.
Yes, it will destroy the cell that's producing that protein. And so that's where you get the supposed protection. That, you know, if you ever encounter that spike protein again, you should be protected. However, with coronaviruses, they have a kind of a unique feature in that antibodies don't appear to be the protective arm of the immune system to help you deal successfully with a coronavirus. What you need is actually a T cell response, whereas antibodies are B cell. And so people that tend to make a lot of antibodies because they are deficient in T cells or they have a weak T cell response, tend to be the ones that get into trouble when they encounter coronaviruses. And so these antibodies end up creating the cytokine storm, which can ultimately kill somebody. So well, that's what happened in the animal studies is when, you know, they were able to generate a very robust antibody response in all of the animals, test subjects. But when they were challenged with the real virus, the wild-type virus, they got very sick and died. So the antibodies were actually, what the antibodies will do is they act as a Trojan horse, and they enable the virus to go further and wider than it would have on its own. And that's why you would get disseminated symptoms. They wouldn't just be limited to wherever the virus made its entry.
How does the RNA, which is a virus in itself, it's a double strand or a single strand? I forget.
In this particular virus, it's a single strand of RNA, positive single strand, which means it can go directly into a cell, and it doesn't need to be translated. It can just start producing proteins, or it doesn't need to be transcribed, rather. It starts producing proteins right away.
So the RNA, does it go in and change the DNA of the cell as well? Does it embed itself in the chromosome?
It theoretically it should not, but that is a point of contention.
Calling it gene therapy. They're saying it qualifies as gene therapy.
Well, yeah, I mean it's co-opting your own cellular machinery, and you know you're putting a different gene sequence than what is supposed to or designed to be in there, and you know now you're starting to produce a foreign protein, which is viewed as a pathogen. Now, there are situations where this RNA could theoretically become a part of your own DNA. If you were co-infected with a retrovirus, or if you had activated, you know, human endogenous retroviruses, which we all do, they're usually silent, but not always, then that enzyme that activates them, reverse transcriptase, can be used to integrate this foreign RNA into your genome. And, you know, in which case you'll be producing spike proteins forever, or whatever it is this thing is coding for. I mean, we're taking a leap of faith when they tell us that, it's just producing the spike protein.
That's right. All right, let's just take it at that level. It's only going to produce the spike protein, okay? But it's going to do so forever. There's no off switch to this.
Well, that's what we don't know. I mean, there should be, but they haven't done the studies to determine how long does this go on for.
And the longer it goes on, the more active your immune system will be in trying to target out this spike protein, this protein that's not supposed to be there, and the cell from which it came.
No, just think about that. If it's in your brain, which I would guess, you know, so these symptoms that people are reporting, this stuff is making its way into the brain. And so your immune system's
right
going to be attacking
it goes
your brain.
Right through the blood-brain barrier. It's in the brain, you bet. Yeah. So
Pfizer's own biodistribution studies showed that it did end up in the brain, yes, within 8 hours.
And what happens?
I don't know. Ask the rat.
I mean, as far as the immune system going after the issues in the brain, it's going to kill brain cells.
That chronic activation can't be, or chronic inflammation can't be good. I mean, you could end up with all kinds of things.
A lot of people.
Neurological deficits.
Yes, a lot of people, and I don't even know how many mRNA units, let's call them, are in the injection. How many single-strand viruses are there, RNA viruses? Thousands? Millions? One? We don't know. They don't tell us. But they're covered with a nanotech lipid covering. Please explain a little bit more about that.
Okay, so the Pfizer and the Moderna vaccines use lipid nanoparticles. And these are tiny, tiny spheres of synthetic lipids or fats combined with a little bit of cholesterol, combined with polyethylene glycol. And this is for a couple reasons. The RNA by itself is very delicate, and it's just, you know, you need something to protect it.
Okay.
Otherwise, it'll fall apart and it won't do what it's supposed to do. So they encase them in these lipid nanoparticles, and that's what's in the injection. And that's why they need to be kept at a very cold temperature, because they'll melt.
Minus 94
frozen.
Fahrenheit. Pretty cold.
Yeah, that's the
indeed.
Pfizer. The Moderna is not quite so cold, but still it's pretty cold.
Right.
The Pfizer one requires, a special freezer to get that cold.
Now, this is crazy. Okay, so it goes into the body. It's got this nanolipid protective covering on it. I don't know if they let it thaw out. Are they injecting it at minus 94 into your system? It can't.
It'd be frozen, wouldn't it? Yeah, no, they can stay at room temperature for, a short time.
Okay.
You know, maybe several hours, I think.
Uh-huh.
So I would assume they'd warm it up a little bit before they inject it into somebody.
That would be a jolt. Now, a lot of people remember, you'll see, and I think many of you have read this, terrible headaches almost immediately after getting injected. Well, what does that tell you? It tells you what you just heard Erica Kahn describe, how this thing goes into the blood-brain barrier area and passes right through, goes into the brain, and triggers brain cells who are otherwise very busy taking care of life and helping you make decisions, etc. And it triggers these brain cells into making this spike protein that comes with the virus. But there's no virus there. The virus is a joke. Forget the virus. The virus isn't the problem. We spent a year or so running away from this terrible, terrible boogeyman virus, when in point of fact, now we're having to run away from the cure, the alleged vaccine. That's the dangerous part, obviously. Anybody who's followed this knows it. And yet that doesn't stop Americans from queuing up every day at locations to get themselves injected.
The irony of it is really remarkable. I mean, the fact that people would rather take their chances on a vaccine produced by Big Pharma than just deal with a virus that's been shown to have a less than 1% case fatality rate.
At less than 0.25%, 1%.
Yeah.
It's a joke. And look, coincidentally, to keep their fake numbers up, they've taken all influenza victims and basically ascribed every flu death as a coronavirus death. That's one of the things they're doing.
Yeah, the
whole thing is so phony. It's all a fraud. All right.
And it's now, totally contingent on, fake numbers, fake statistics, fake data, suppression of accurate information, and fear.
The greatest hoax ever perpetrated on an otherwise unsuspecting public. It's just been astonishing. Now, I'm very concerned about this for a number of reasons. It goes into the brain. Think about that. It never stops producing these spike proteins. Now they're talking about that J&J CEO says, well, you might need this every year, this shot, from now on. Every year. That suggests that it may run a cycle and kind of wear itself out after a year? I don't know. That would be nice to think about, that in time you might be able to surmount this deadly challenge you've been given with this injection. What do you think?
I don't think people are going to survive 3, 4, 5, 6 of these injections. I don't see it.
I don't think they will survive long enough. No.
And I, you know, what is the real reason? Why do we want 7 billion people producing spike proteins to coronavirus? Why? You know, when 20 years of research has shown that, you know, vaccines of this nature are they don't work, and they make, you know, real life infections with coronavirus infinitely worse, if not totally lethal.
We know, I'll step a little, I'm no scientist, but I'm going to step aside from this train of thought just for a moment and go over to the Deagle.com. This is nothing to do with Bill Deagle, the talk show host. This is Deagle.com. And most of you listening have seen this, and you understand that this organization, it's a business, it's an NGO, produces and gathers, collates and collects and presents to paying clients intelligence data. Now, they came out with these projections in 2017 originally, I think it was 17, and they've updated them as of 2019, but they didn't change much. By 2025, that's less than 4 years from now, the United States, the formerly United States, is supposed to have 99 million left out of 330. So we're talking about 230 million Americans dying, according to the Deagle projections, in less than 4 years. Now, that's pretty horrific. But when you look at all the other Western civilized countries, Italy, Spain, France, Germany, right? Luxembourg, Belgium, England, doesn't matter, all of them. Move over to Canada and the U.S., of course. All of them are due to have from moderate to severe declines in people, population, gross domestic product. Their military expenditure likewise plummets. These countries, according to the Deagle projections, have been utterly devastated by something within the next 4 years. What do you think the possibilities that it's this unproven, obviously unsafe, and deadly in many cases, injection? That could be the perfect backdoor to removing people. All they have to do is wait a couple years until your immune system gets real tired of fighting 27 hours a day against these spike proteins coming from cells all over your body. I don't know how many cells are going to be infected with this RNA. All of them? I don't know. If they give you a shot every year, it's obviously something that they're going to continue to hope does that very thing, and your immune system will become overstretched, worn out, and what happens when you cannot mount a normal immunological response to any number of severe diseases that otherwise would be kept away from you? In AIDS patients, they call these hallmark diseases, 30 hallmark diseases. This is rather like HIV/AIDS, Erica, because your immune system is going to burn itself out.
Yeah, if the immune system can't clear this, and it sets up, you know, to be chronic and persistent, then yeah, you've just got AIDS induced by a synthetic virus. Now, one thing that I haven't heard people talking about, everybody's so concerned that, you know, is it going to be integrated into my DNA? Well, I don't know. Nobody knows. Time will tell. There is some evidence that in real life infection with SARS-CoV-2 that may be happening, but again, they don't know for sure. But that can happen with any viral illness, really. But one of the things I have thought about that I don't hear anybody talking about is the potential for viral reassortment with this particular technology. And what that is, you know, viruses are continuing to evolve and change and adapt to, you know, whatever conditions they find themselves in. And there is a school of thought, and I think it goes beyond thought, that vaccines tend to drive virulence. Just like, you know, overuse of antibiotics will you know, eventually result in the emergence of resistant strains, antibiotic-resistant strains. Well, the same thing happens with viruses. You know, through selective pressure, if you know, we're trying to eliminate a certain strain of virus, well, it just mutates. And
sure.
So the fact that we are injecting a segment of viral material into a person's body that, I mean, we all have other viruses in us at any given time, quite a few of them actually. Most of them are not pathogenic, or else we'd be, you know, we'd be showing signs of disease. Although, you know, nowadays they say the average person has about 7 latent infections. I mean,
really?
They don't know they have them. They're infected with something.
At any given time.
At any given time. That's normal, natural. Uh-huh. I don't know that you can really do anything about it, but at any given time, you're harboring 7 latent or stealth infections. Now, here comes this vaccine with a little segment of genetic material. Just happens to be the type of the thing needed to penetrate a cell.
Mm-hmm.
And now you're injecting this into somebody that could be harboring any number of other viruses, you know, not the least of which is something like HIV or herpes or, you know, some kind of oncogenic or cancer-causing leukemia virus, maybe. And now here comes a piece of genetic material that, well, those other viruses could maybe utilize and incorporate into their genome, and now suddenly you have airborne AIDS, or airborne HIV, I should say. Nobody's talking about that possibility.
No, there are multiple possibilities that very few are talking about. Certainly not the mainstream media. They're following their directions. They're encouraging everybody to follow the leader, the sheep in front of you. Just go right on up the slaughterhouse ramp. Don't worry. Everything's fine here. Keep moving.
I mean, I can't find a single valid reason to take this vaccine.
Well said. Not one single valid reason to take this vaccine. There is no reason to take it with respect to the coronavirus, which is now demonstrated quite clearly to be not a problem. It's not a problem. The influenza virus is probably generally going to be worse, especially if you're sick or run down and don't have a good immune system. We know that the flu's bad. This is no worse than a flu, and probably in many cases it may even be better. People don't even know they get it. Most people can't say that about influenza. You'll know you're going to get the flu. I mean, you get the flu, you got the flu, you know it. You feel like crap, and most people get through it, and their body has learned how to beat that particular flu virus. In this case, your immune system cannot learn how to defeat this, really, the spike protein, because you're always seeing it. So your immune system will continue to try and try and try, and after a while, as I said, your immune system is going to run down. It can't help it. It can't do the other things it's supposed to do. It's being overwhelmed with these spike proteins being made by your own cells. How diabolically, satanically evil and clever Is this whole thing?
This is known in the world of virology that coronaviruses are like this. You know, it's a cell-mediated infection, meaning you've got to have a decent T cell response to deal with this. And they know that, you know, antibodies don't help. But vaccine is not going to fix a dysregulated immune system, which is really the problem. The people that are having a problem with this virus have a dysregulated immune system for whatever reason. They may be co-infected with, you know, some kind of latent, you know, retrovirus would be my first guess, that just decimates the T-cell function. It just, you know, skews it. Or they're very old. And, you know, older people have poor T-cell function. They have lots and lots of memory T-cells, but they can't generate any naive T-cells to respond to a new threat.
Right.
So, I mean, the classic picture of people who are, you know, badly affected by this virus, it's not the typical average person. It's people with very distinct risk factors having to do with their cell-mediated immunity. And a vaccine that produces antibodies is not going to fix that. It's going to make it worse.
Okay, I hope you all heard that. That was very important, too. With respect to that little thug, my words, not Erica's, Fauci, he now wants to turn this death jab, this injection, this unproven phase 3, still in trial, jab on children, little children, 4, 5, and 6 years old. That's what he wants to do. What's
this
he doing
crazy.
That for? What's he doing that for? They want to see how children can handle this. They're guinea pigs. They're willing to sacrifice children. They don't care. He doesn't care. This guy's a monster. I'm speaking for myself.
No, I agree. I it's almost unconscionable what he's doing.
It is unconscionable.
And it's full steam ahead. You know, nobody's
right.
Nobody in the government's objecting. He's got, free rein. Go for it.
He's the highest. Do you know he's the highest paid employee at the U.S. government?
I know.
Did you know that? This is incredible. I think all of that means something to a lot of you. And if you go back, I went back looking last night. I think it was last night. Yeah, it was last night. For the 1969 House Subcommittee hearings with the Department of Defense, where the Department of Defense, with the support of Robert Gallo, asked Congress for, I forgot how many millions back then, to develop a new organism. I think they called it an organism, meaning a virus. Maybe they said virus, I can't remember now. That would make our immune system defective. And they wanted it as a defensive, read offensive, military weapon. They wanted the money to build a weapon that would make a virus that would defeat the immune system of the enemy. Okay, that was their pitch. Well, they got the money, they made the virus, HIV, human immunodeficiency virus, and they put it in the 1975-1976 hepatitis B vaccines given to American homosexuals who admitted that they were promiscuous, and then they put it in the smallpox vaccine and took it to Africa, and their goal was to hopefully depopulate most of sub-Saharan Africa so they could go in there and take out the resources. That's what they wanted to do. But the virus was so unstable, it wouldn't hold still, and it kept mutating into, I think it was 5 to the 4,000th power, Erica, or something crazy like that. And it kept mutating into less virulent forms. So people could have any number of different forms of the human immunodeficiency virus and not get sick and die. And that's how people got confused. Anyway, it didn't work, but it was a try. That was a massive genocide effort. HIV is what it was.
It's criminal. It's really criminal. And now it's being unleashed on us.
I hope all of you out there are able and having some success at talking to people. And I was going to play part of a video this hour, but I didn't get to it. Let me direct you to it. Go on the right-hand side of the homepage and go down to Featured Stories. All right? It's under the YouTube section, and you'll see it. It's there. It's right below Nano Joe, Creeper Joe. It's the coronavirus category. And scroll down just far enough. Let me see. I'll count it for you. 2, 4, 6, 8, 10. It's 9. Number 9. It's Once We Were the Living. It's a documentary. And it is awesome. And you must look at it. And if you have people who think you're crazy for trying to warn them about this so-called vaccine, challenge them. Say, look at this video. Tell me what you think. I'm confused. Play dumb. Look at this video. I'll sit and watch it with you. I don't understand it. How can this be? And that's your only hope, because if you try to verbally convince them, they'll never listen. If they see it on TV, it's got much more clout. So it's entitled Once We Were the Living, okay? And it's stunning. It's a longer video, but it's crucially important. It's almost an hour and 45 minutes. Now I've got it, I'm cutting it down to about an hour and 10 so people will be able to watch it a little more easily and comfortably. But it has everything in it. One of the things, and I want to talk about this real quickly, Erica, it's important. The test, the swab that they're giving people, the swab, okay? The first swabs were on those 10-foot long sticks, and they put it up people's nose and actually pressed against that plate, that thin bone plate that separates your sinuses from the front of your brain. And now a nurse in this video has actually taken some of these swabs, sealed, opened them up, and pulled the what looks like cotton, it's like a Q-tip, pulled it apart and looked at it under magnification. Not intense magnification. I don't know what it is, 20x, maybe something like that. And you've seen the video, haven't you, Erica? You must have.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
And what does she find in there, in that supposed cotton at the end of the swab? What does she find?
Well, the one I was looking at, you know, you could see little flecks of metallic something, but some of them appeared to have filaments that were moving.
There you go. Now, filaments, just for you listeners, that think tube, filament, think thin strand,
a wire.
Think a strand. Think of a piece of cotton in that swab. Well, this lady pulled them all apart, and those individual pieces of cotton, in some cases, are moving. They are moving. They're not sitting still. What's that all about? Well, I know what that's all about. That's called Morgellons. Those are Morgellons fibers, and they move. And under higher magnification, each one of those filaments, as Erica described it correctly, if you look at it, it's a tube, and inside the tube are round items all in a row in the tube. They look like eggs, so to speak. I believe that these tubes, these filaments, are throwing these little round items out, and they themselves are beginning the process all over again. That's my take. And I would urge all of you to look at, if you haven't seen it, the Creeper Joe Nano Joe article that I put together. It took me days, and it shows all about these Morgellons fibers that move. All right? Crucially important to understand the connection. But in the meantime, look at that video, Once We Were Alive. Go ahead. We've got a minute or so. You want to wrap it up and give us your final on this?
Well, yeah, there was another alarming study that came out this week, or that I saw for the first time this week, was on somebody has determined that among the other things in these mRNA vaccines, another one of the epitopes or genetic sequences they found have to do with RNA binding proteins that can induce prion disease. You don't know what a prion disease is, it's Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease or mad cow disease or scrapie in sheep, but it's not a disease that you want. Basically your brain turns into what looks like a sponge. It's full of holes, and it is fatal. There's no cure for it.
No cure, no treatment at all. Now,
nope.
give me the component where this is in this RNA.
It's one of the sequences in the RNA for the so-called spike protein.
Wow!
In the Moderna and Pfizer vaccines. This one only pertained to the Pfizer, but I
okay.
Assume it's
so
for
we're
both, but.
We're talking about in this RNA single strand, there is apparently some coding that leads to what we call mad cow disease. That's what we call it here.
It's proteins that are associated with causing or inducing prion disease, yes.
Which is misfolding proteins that
yes.
do damage to the brain and kill you.
Yes.
Oh, my. Oh,
yep.
My. All right. Well, this, you see, if they're using this as a mass weapon of genocide, it will take years for people, 3, 4, 5 years, for them to die of mad cow, and they'll just call it Alzheimer's. Early onset Alzheimer's, they'll call it. Right? They'll lie. And in two or 3 years from now, if you get liver disease, nothing to do with the vaccine. That was 2 years ago.
Right.
If you get kidney disease, nothing to do with that. If you get cancers, nothing to do with that vaccine. When in point of fact, it could have everything to do with this vaccine. We're going to know in the next 2 to 4 years if this thing is what I think it is and what I fear it is. We're going to find out. We may find out sooner than that. Dr. Sherry Tenpenny says it'll be 3 to 6 months we're going to start seeing people get very sick.
Oh, she's not the only one saying that. A lot of medical professionals are saying that. You know, that they've seen how these things progress.
Exactly.
You know, they understand the immunology and the virology, and you know, this is much, much more than a vaccine. You can't even call it a vaccine. That's ridiculous.
I agree. Erica, thank you very much for being here, and I'd like to have you
come back
again. We'll update this as it continues to roll out, and it's rolling out fast. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Jeff.
Okay, good night.
All right, bye.
Erica Kahn, MIT grad, nanotechnology scientist, and there it is, ladies and gentlemen. I'll put this up on the site as a free listen for everybody. Share it. I put it on YouTube, but you know what'll happen there. It'll be gone within an hour. It's domestic terrorism to question the coronavirus treatment. Remember? Be right back.